The District Parent Coordinating Council in the Buffalo school system is planning a one-day boycott this Monday to protest what they see as lingering problems in the district. They'll attempt to keep as many kids as possible out of the classroom on that day. It is a tactic that has its share of critics, yet the vice president of the parents' group, Sam Radford, says it's an idea that has been carefully explored. I spoke with Sam earlier in the week about the boycott and about the council's diligence, which he said is more about a shift in focus than anything else.
This is not a new intensity for our group. Really, what has happened is over the last 3 years, we've just grown and we become more effective. And we're making less of the same kinds of mistakes. So initially, we really started off attacking the Board of Education and attacking the superintendent and attacking, you know, people. And we found out that doesn't work. At the end of the day, it is the underlying structure that sustains the system that really is the problem. And so that's probably what's put us in a position where we're able to be more targeted in terms of what our concerns are.
And when you say the underlying structure, are you talking about the fact that you have identified specific problems in the district, or you've identified the reality that we need an entirely new model here?
I think both of those are the answer. I mean, the truth of the matter is there are different problems within the district. I mean, we really have a two-tiered education system in Buffalo.
Explain that.
Two-tier education is really that simple. We have an education system that we take the best of our students and we test them out in eighth grade and put them into the best of high schools. We put them in the Hutch Tech, City Honors, Da Vinci, McKinley Performing Arts. We take our best and most talented students and we give them the best education, and everybody else gets what's left. So if you don't get into this top tier of our schools, or you don't get lucky, you don't get a quality education in Buffalo.
All right, Sam, but who's responsible for perpetuating this system? Clearly, we can see the flaws here, but why does this continue? Who's allowing this to continue?
I believe that the real answer to that is us as a community. The only way it's going to turn it around is we all have to admit that there's a problem, admit that this is not the kind of city in the education system that we want to have, because we all pay for it. At the end of the day, this is financed by taxpayers. Without no taxpayer finance, this does not happen.
Now, you've already mentioned that it's not a question of problems recently surfacing. They've been present for a while. How do we begin once we come together as a community? What are the first steps we take to begin to correct these problems?
The first step is what we try to do on May 3rd, is we try to get an admission from all the stakeholders that there is a problem. Once you admit, you bring all the stakeholders to the table, and you begin to talk about what will work. I'll give you a real practical example of this. Right now, if you look at the people who make the decisions about education in Buffalo, none of those people catch the bus to work. None of those people go to the school, or their children or go to schools that are persistently low achieving school. So we don't have the voice of the people who are most affected by the decisions that people are making, even at the table. Like, for example, busing versus neighborhood schools. That decision is a killer in terms of parent involvement. I mean, we all, the people who've studied this issue, you know, in Buffalo, over only 49% of the people have transportation. That's 51% of the people don't have transportation. You know that the head of the household in 70% of the households in Buffalo Public Schools are single parents. So if you have single parents who have children who go to school in three different parts of the city versus a neighborhood school, and they have to figure out a way to go to PTA meetings, go to parent-teachers conferences, school-based management team, plus work, plus deal with their children. It's just impractical to think about a busing system. It's much more practical to think about a neighborhood school. So that's a beginning of the conversation.
So who are the stakeholders that are denying the existence of a problem?
I don't know that they deny the existence of a problem, but as opposed to saying we all have a part in the solution, and focusing on the solution, what we've heard is a lot of people saying that, listen, the problem is the state education department, the problem is the state legislature, the problem is the parents, the problem is the teachers. We've heard everybody point to the blame, but that don't do us any good to spend a lot of time focusing on blaming people. What we're really looking for is, how do we commit to a solution? And I like the state education department's position. John King came in here last week and he made it crystal clear. He will come with us in that room, and if we can get somebody to come in the room and lock the door and all the people come to the table and say, what do we do to turn around Buffalo Public School District?
And when we talk about turning around the Buffalo Public School District, there are, in fact, turnaround models now that have been voted on by the board for the schools, for the district's lowest performing schools. What's the parents group position on the educational partnership model?
We don't have a particular position on the educational partnership model, but we do have a problem with the process. And anybody who observed this process, it really is reflective of how bad the situation has gotten. If you go back and you look at the last 30 days, we have had three different plans, and the first one is a polar opposite of the last one. So the question is, How did we make a educated, qualified decision in 30 days for a problem that's been here for decades and it switched three times? All we did is bend to where the power was at. Parents have not been at the table. We got the plans on last week, Friday, and we're told that, you know, we had a couple of days to look at them. And that's not meaningful involvement.
So clearly no research took place.
Research took place. And even the research that took place did not, even the research that was done by the district administrative staff, that research was totally dismissed. And we went with the model that the board went with because they got pressure from the Buffalo Teachers Federation to go with a different model.
When we look at the long-range effect of implementing these plans or implementing a particular idea, let's turn it around for a minute, Sam, and look at the boycott that is coming on the 16th. Has this been researched? Are there certain risks in a boycott like this?
As a matter of fact, it's been totally researched. We looked at the history of what has worked in terms of changing the way policy and procedure and structures have changed. If you look at the history of the Buffalo Teachers Federation, March 1st, 1947, we were looking at a Time magazine article where it said, the largest disruption in public school education in the history of the United States took place in Buffalo, New York, March 1st, 1947. The Buffalo Teachers Federation had been negotiating for 3 months around how to deal with some what they considered structural issues at that time. And so what they decided to do was to go on strike. They were the first public sector union to go on strike. So what the teachers did is they held their resolve until the system adjusted to meet its needs. So what we as parents figured out is that the only way that you can get the system to adjust itself to meet your needs is you have to show you have the ability to stop the system from operating. And until we interrupt it and show that we can stop it, there's nothing that we've been able to do up until now to get them to listen to us.
But in 1947, the mechanism for that interruption was a group of adults. This time it's a group of children. What are the risks in using children to make this kind of job action
this kind of action? Excellent question, because this is really where the rubber hits the roads. At the end of the day, we picked a half a day of school. The half a day of school, first and foremost, doesn't work for children or parents. The half a day of school really is for administrators and teachers. I mean, think about that. I mean, your children come to school at 8 o'clock in the morning. They're going to be leaving before 11 o'clock in the morning. They don't even get lunch in school that day. We already know that half the school children don't come to school that day anyway because it does not work for parents. And we know that most teachers don't teach that day because half the students are not there. So what we said is that we can make a statement about a schedule that's done to accommodate adults and not children and families. And since this district's mission is to put children and families first to ensure high academic achievement for all, we felt that that would make the clear statement.
Sam, why are you so passionate?
Because right now we are at a point where children, we are not talking about like we may in the rural and suburban areas where the consequence may be just unemployment or a poverty. We're now at a point in time where we're talking about people's lives. And when you look at the number of children who are dying, we had a young man last year, Juwan Daniels, who was suspended from school because he was in the hallway in the middle of the day and he got shot dead on the corner when he should have been in school. So when the system has become so dysfunctional that kids are starting to die, it's only a matter of time before it's one of our children, because it is our children. If we as parents don't have the courage to start saving our children's lives, then we're going to sit back and just keep going to these funerals week after week after week.
When we look at the flaws in the system, is too much blame being put on the superintendent?
As far as we as parents are concerned, this is so much bigger than the superintendent. I mean, the reality is if you go look statistically, what you might find is that this is probably one of the best superintendents academically we ever had. If you look at the academic achievement over the last 5 years, he's turned the district around and moved it in the right direction. If you look at our athletic program, he's done stuff in our athletic program that has not been done before. As far as parent involvement, although he was very difficult to work with as it relates to parent involvement in the beginning, the things we've been able to do over the last 2 or 3 years is further than we've been up until now.
So why do we have the suggestions of possible dismissal?
That has nothing to do with parents. Parents have never participated in that conversation. We as parents have to work with whoever the superintendent is, whoever the elected board is. We're not involved in a conversation that talks about replacing people. You know, whether those people are the superintendent or teachers or board members, because people try to make it seem like we're against the teachers union. We love teachers. We love good teachers. Teachers are our best ally for our children to get a good education. We're not against the teachers union. We're not against the board member. We're looking for a system that works, and we want everybody at the table to do that.
Sam, thanks. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too.